Dialectical Behavior Therapy was created in the 1980s by Marsha Linehan in Seattle, Washington.
Today, DBT is taught all over the world.
We're two therapists who believe everyone can benefit from DBT skills.
I'm Kate.
I'm Michelle.
And this is DBT and Me.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Oh, I was just telling Michelle, I was like, oh, man, it's been so long since we did this. I was like, it hasn't been that long. It's been like 1 month. I don't know why this last month has seemed so long.
It's not going to feel long to all of you listening, but we haven't been recording as frequently, and we're aware of this behind the scenes.
We are. Anyway, so if we flub up at all, please forgive us, because it turns out you can swiftly get out of practice of a thing. So the topic today, though, is one I'm pretty excited about. I think it's even one I suggested to Michelle.
Did.
I was like, let's talk about this. And so what we're going to talk about today is self-soothing kits, because I realized that while we've probably offhandedly mentioned it when talking about self-soothing as a skill, I think that's about as far into it as we've gone. So we wanted this opportunity to talk a little bit more about, what are self-soothing kits? We made them so we would have the opportunity to play around with it and tell you what our experiences were. Just as a quick little overview, right? Self-soothing with the five senses is the skill that this is related to, which is for, well, you guys, if you listen at all, you hear me recommend it probably every single Q&A. I'm not sure there's ever a Q&A where I don't suggest it for at least one of the questions. But it's for, on average, more of those, like, more tender feelings, right? Sadness, depression, grief. It can be for anxiety. I'll talk a little bit about that when I'm sharing about my kit and when I used it, but generally not for overwhelming anxiety, right? For a panic attack, you're probably not going to turn to self-soothing. But the idea of a self-soothing kit is how to make that skill portable, right? In any given random-ass environment where you might find yourself, you may not have great access to something that smells really nice or a little piece of food that you can put in your mouth and savor and really focus in on mindfully or, right? There just may not be resources in your environment for you to do the thing, right? To be able to enact the skill. And so this is how to make that portable, how you can take this skill with you anywhere you want to go and be able to turn to it wherever you are. This is that moment where we realize I've done my first flub up, which is I should have done the, and I said should, Jiminy Christmas. I was supposed to, I think, do the awesome self-promotion before I launched this far into what the topic is.
I think this is great timing, though. This is perfect.
Fantastic timing! It's all perfect. It's as it's supposed to be, whatever it is, our perfect imperfection. Anyway, awesome self-promotion time. So to start with, we want to shout out not one, but two new patrons. So a big thank you to Stephanie and Jody.
Thank you both so much.
Right. We cannot tell you how much it means when folks choose to support us and the podcast. If you'd like to join Stephanie and Jody and get shouted out in the next episode, you can do that at patreon.com/dbtandme. You can also support the podcast by checking out our Etsy store, which is etsy.com/shop/dbtandme. You can search for us there, but it's a little harder than it ought to be, you think, considering the exact name.
There's so much on Etsy, which is, like, amazing. So many
cool
DBT things. But yeah, if you want to find us specifically, it is harder than you'd think, actually, to find us on Etsy, is what we found out.
Right? I know, you're like, DBT and Me podcast. You're like, why is all this other stuff here? I mean, fantastic, but also. So you can also give us a rate. That's a new word. A rate and review. There we go. On Apple Podcasts or really anywhere else that you are listening to us now. And definitely reach out to us via email, dbtandmepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your guys' feedback, your questions, your ideas for future episodes. Just saying hello. also totally allowed. Right. We love hearing from all of you. And last but certainly not least, check out our other podcast, The Couch and the Chair, where we talk about all of the not DBT related mental health stuff that we like to yak about. So anything else you want to say overarchingly, Michelle, about what today's topic is? Or shall we launch into your experience of putting together your kit, utilizing it, etc.?
Yeah, I say we can just launch in. And hopefully if people are currently sitting here having questions, my hope is that hearing us each share about our personal experiences with our kits will hopefully clarify things. And as Kate was saying, if you all have questions at the end of this about, I still don't know or don't feel confident making my own self-soothing kit, then send us emails and we'll help you out.
Truth.
But yeah, I'll go ahead and dive in. So we thought it would make sense to first start by sharing what was in our kits. So for my kit, and I will just be super honest, I wanted to make it so that I could fit my self-soothing kit in my purse. I wanted to be able to bring it with me anytime that I left the house. And I'm not the kind of person who carries around a large purse. My purse is pretty small. And so my self-soothing kit all fit inside a Ziploc plastic bag, a sandwich size plastic bag. That was my fancy self-soothing kit.
So I just put fancy.
Everything in a Ziploc bag. But it worked and it fit. And then it led to me, because I try to fight my perfectionism, right? Like just telling myself, okay, this doesn't need to be in some cute little bag, right? This can just be wherever I can fit it. So that's what I put all this stuff in. But I'm just going to walk you guys through what I did for each of the five senses. So with sight, basically on the day where I decided I was going to make my self-soothing kit so that I could start practicing using it and all of that good stuff, I had a magazine around that I had already read. And so I just grabbed the magazine and flipped it open and just tried to find some pictures that I liked. And I found two pictures of snowy mountains. And if you've been listening to the podcast long enough, I'm guessing I've mentioned it at some point.
But you love snow.
I love snow. So for me, being able to look at images of snow would be really soothing. So I just cut out those pictures real quick. So that's what I did for sight or vision. Hearing, I guess, disclaimer, it is hard to do hearing with a self-soothing kit. That Truth. Just feels important to name. Maybe you have a physical object that makes a nice sound that you like. But what I did for hearing actually was not something that I could physically put into my Ziploc plastic bag. But I already had a playlist on Spotify for what I call chanting music. So my therapist introduced me to chanting music back in 2017. And basically, how do I explain it? I mean, it's singing in Sanskrit, saying things like Om, but it's just like really soothing melodies, and it's often saying the same sounds over and over again, and that can be really calming for the nervous system. So I already had a playlist of that kind of music made on my phone, and I just set the intention that if I wanted to self-soothe using hearing, that that is what I would choose to listen to. So that's what I did for that. For taste, that was actually probably the easiest one to find stuff for my self-soothing kit. I grabbed some bags of fruit snacks. I love fruit snacks. And some, you know, fun-sized pieces of chocolate, some Kit Kats, some Reese's, and put those in there. For touch, I did a little, again, kind of like a travel-size lotion. Because I think lotion is fantastic for touch and really accessible. And then I also got something, this was now a couple months ago. I went to my yoga class one day, and somebody in the class had made, I don't know how best to describe it. They were really small. I mean, smaller than the palm of your hand. But they had made some little hearts out of felt. So they're just really soft, really small, and I found that heart, and I was like, oh, this is kind of perfect for something that's small and transportable for soothing with touch. So I did that. And then for smell, I put in two essential oils. I did lemon and I did peppermint. For me, citrus scents are my favorite kind of scent. I just naturally gravitate towards them. And then I found that peppermint can really help with energy. If I'm having a low energy day and I use peppermint, that really helps. Citrus can also help with increasing energy levels. If I could have added a third, I probably would have added lavender. But I just put in two. By that point, my plastic bag was getting kind of full. So that's what I made my self-soothing kit out of. As far as when I used it, I really noticed two themes emerging for when I was using my kit the most. One was when I found myself feeling busy at work. So for me, when I look at the reasons for why I leave my house these days, I mean, oftentimes I'm just like running errands, like a lot of times with my son in tow with me, or I'm at work. I mean, those are the biggest reasons why I'm leaving the house. Occasionally it's for fun things, but most often it's just the routine day-to-day stuff. And so I caught myself using it at work pretty often, mostly just trying to tune in and notice how I was feeling in my body when I started to feel the first signs of stress. And then I wanted to turn to self-soothing in the hopes of lowering that stress. And we've talked about this in general when we discussed this skill. You know, this is not the skill to use if you're on an 8, 9, or 10 on the stress scale. So for me, I was trying to catch those early signs of stress when I was having a busy or overwhelming day at work, and then tried to intervene with using self-soothing so that hopefully that number wouldn't continue to rise on the stress scale, that it would stay where it was or even lower as a result of me doing some self-soothing. So I noticed myself using it then. And the other time where I actually thought of it the most would be when I was driving. And that kind of surprised me. But, you know, as a busy parent of a young child, one of the only times that I really am sitting for any extended period of time is driving. Like, that's my time where my mind can be kind of idle, you could say. My mind can wander. There isn't much that I can do. There's not much competing for my attention. And so I would catch myself when I was driving, like maybe at a red light, being like, hey, now it's a good time to eat a piece of chocolate. Or there was one day where I noticed that my jaw was really tense. And so what I did, again, this was while I was driving, I took out that little felt heart that I was describing, and I just like put it to my jaw, and I just kind of held it there a little bit and just tried to make this intentional effort to, you know, just give my jaw — it sounds kind of woo-woo to put it like this, but just to give my jaw some love, to be like, okay, there's some tension here. How can I bring some calming to this part of my body? So those are some examples of how I used it when I was driving. But that was when I most thought about it. I really did not think about my kit too much when I was at home. And I didn't find myself using it in social situations or things like that. It was really mostly work and driving. That kind of surprised me, but that's just when I was using it. So the last thing I'll wrap up with before I turn it over to Kate to talk about her experience, we wanted to talk about just what we noticed from this experience of using a self-soothing kit. So I'll actually probably talk more here than I have up until now, because there were a number of things that I noticed that felt significant to me. The first thing was just the act of making the kit put self-soothing on my mind. as a skill. And maybe it was just the specific circumstances of, I knew we would be recording this episode, I knew we would be talking about this, that also maybe put it front and center in my mind, but I just found myself in general thinking about self-soothing more often as a skill. Even though, as I just said, I didn't use my kit when I was at home, I actually found myself self-soothing in other ways. I found myself wrapping up in a blanket more often. I found myself viewing some of the things that I naturally tend to do and being like, oh, and you're actually practicing self-soothing. We talk about that sometimes, right? There's really two different ways to come at using skills. One is that you make the conscious decision, I want to use this skill, and then you use it. Sometimes you're doing the thing and then you happen to realize you're using a skill. And it was kind of more of that for me with the second one, because I just had self-soothing on my mind that I was doing maybe a little more self-soothing at home, even if it wasn't using the stuff from my kit. So that was really interesting. And I think that that can be something to take away from this practice of creating a self-soothing kit, is when you do take the time to intentionally focus on a skill and you just plant that seed in your brain. Hey, I'm creating this opportunity to use this skill if I want to use it. Your brain's maybe going to remember it differently and be more likely to come back to that skill in various ways. So that was certainly the case for me. But there were a lot of things that I actually noticed surprised me, because when Kate first suggested this as an episode topic, which is like, we should make self-soothing kits and then use them and then, you know, record our next episode about what the experience was like, my initial thought reaction was, oh my gosh, that sounds so fun and easy and this will be great. Because self-soothing is not a complicated DBT skill. It's not. Right? Like, it's not an acronym. It's not radical acceptance. Like, self-soothing, all things considered, is a fairly straightforward, simple DBT skill. So I thought that this would be really easy to, like, I found it relatively easy to make the kit itself, but I thought, I was like, I'm going to be using my kit like every day. Every time I feel sad over the next month, I'm going to be using my kit all over the place. That's really what I believed. It was harder than I thought it would be to actually be tuned in to my emotions. And to then not only notice what I was feeling, but then to be able to prioritize taking care of myself by doing self-soothing. Because full disclosure here, this is what typically happens for me. Either I'm just so busy, you know, we talk about wise mind in this way of not just the intersection between like reason mind and emotion mind, but it can also be the intersection of doing mind and being mind. I am in my doing mind so often that you could ask me at the end of the day, Michelle, what did you feel emotionally today? And I would most days have a hard time telling you. I mean, truthfully, I'm just so busy doing. I'm not pausing to check in with myself of how I'm really doing or what I'm really feeling. That's not happening as much as I wish it was. And so when it comes to using a self-soothing kit, the first step to using the self-soothing kit is to realize you need to use the self-soothing kit. And I don't think I was tuned in with my emotions enough. I mean, I really saw that during this experience. You know, there would be times where I'm like, oh, I didn't use my self-soothing kit at all this last week. I'm sure there was probably a time or two where I could have benefited from using it, but I was too busy to pause and notice what I was feeling. And there were times where maybe I did pause and notice what I was feeling, but then I was like, well, I don't have time to self-soothe. That happened too, quite a bit. So I want to say that to normalize for any of you who may have already tried self-soothing kits and found the same experience, or you're thinking about wanting to try this out, which we would really encourage you to do so. We're going to give some tips and suggestions at the end of the closing moment. We'll help you in all of this to kick it off with creating your own kit. But like, yeah, I mean, truly, I was shocked at how often I just really overlooked opportunities where I could have self-soothed and I didn't. So don't be surprised if that happens to you. It's really normal. And don't beat yourself up about it. Like, we're humans. We're living busy, chaotic lives. And also, the beauty of self-soothing as a skill is that it is an opportunity to slow down and tend to yourself emotionally. And yeah, this experience really taught me that I need to work on that. Things my therapist is already aware of, but yeah, it really showed me that. Because one of the things that happened during this experience, which in our Radical Acceptance Turning the Mind episode that we released last month, like, Kate talked about friendship loss, and I alluded to briefly in that episode that I had also recently lost a friend, and what a perfect opportunity to use self-soothing. And did I, like, consciously use it? No, I didn't. I really didn't. And that would have been a perfect time, was actually, like, help me process the grief. I still don't think I fully processed the grief from losing my friend. So don't be surprised if you find yourself feeling too busy to use it. But that's the whole point of why it's there, so that you can do it even in those really busy moments. I also noticed that sometimes I wasn't self-soothing as mindfully as I would have liked to. Maybe part of that was because of, as I named, like, doing it in the car or doing it in the middle of a busy work day or just the context in which I was using it. I just felt like I was doing it on the fly a lot, right? So my experience with it is basically that I would recognize, oh, I'm feeling kind of stressed and busy. Let me try to do something for self-soothing. And then, you know, what would I do? Oh, I'd maybe eat one of my fruit snack packs. Well, I wasn't eating it mindfully. Let's be clear. I found myself, again, just kind of, I was doing the thing. It made the moment a little better. Like I was mentioning, okay, if I was feeling at a 5 on a stress scale, you know, say eating the fruit snacks was a good thing. Maybe prevented me from going a little higher, but did I actually pause, savor each bite of the fruit snack pack? No.
No.
I didn't. So I really think I would have gotten more bang for my buck if I had really actually slowed down even more to do the self-soothing things that I put in my kit. I think that would have just, yeah, packed more of a punch, so to speak. And then the final thing that I noticed is that there were certain senses out of the 5 that I was really drawn to, and the ones that I didn't actually wind up using much. I didn't once use vision or hearing. So I never looked at those snowy mountain pictures that I cut out, and I didn't wind up listening to my playlist on Spotify. I mostly turned to taste and touch. I did do essential oils once or twice, but mostly it felt most comforting to eat something that was like an enjoyable food for me to eat, or to, yeah, touch that small felt heart that I had, or to put on some lotion. That's the stuff that resonated most with me. So that was kind of interesting to see. And again, I don't think like there's good or bad, right or wrong, if you wind up only using like one or two of the senses. Just, I think just noticing that for yourself. And I'm kind of moving into, I just thought of this as like a tip. We are going to talk about tips at the end after Kate shares. But like, maybe that's something too, that say if you notice that the sense you're really gravitating towards is, say, smell, for example. I mean, you can revamp your self-soothing kit to make it really heavy on smells. And if you're like, I don't ever use, say, touch, then you can get rid of the touch stuff and just have it be smell stuff. Whatever sense is going to be most calming for you, I think you can certainly do that. But yeah, I did not use 2 out of 5. So that was a thing that I noticed as part of this experience as well. So that's all my stuff. What about you, Kate?
Apparently I'm yawning. That's apparently what I'm doing right now.
It is a gray, cloudy day here in Washington.
Oh my gosh. And I don't know about where you are, but it's also like just like a curtain of rain outside.
Yep.
It's one of those days you have to turn the lights on all day or you can't see in a room. Gosh, those are the worst for me. Maybe I have to using my kit right now. But we'll go to that with a little bit and what I noticed. So to start with, what did I build my kit out of / what did I put in it? I think I split the difference between like working really hard for a container, doing my, I don't know, decorating my own thing or getting something super fancy. I did not do any of that. I just got a pencil case.
I like that.
Like, cause, you know, it has a zipper and it's like durable enough to last or whatever, but it's still similar to you, small enough to put in a purse or like maybe conceptually I didn't, but I could have like put it in a glove compartment or whatever, right? I wanted it to be not just portable, but also, I don't know, I guess, yes, portable. Ah, see, more yawns. But like easily portable. There you go. I didn't want it to have to be its own thing. I wanted it to be able to go easily about with me. The sight is the same thing that I've used when I don't know why I got out of the practice of having a self-soothing kit on hand. I don't even remember when it happened, but I did. I put back into this one, the one that I used to think, same thing I used to have in my self-soothing kit, which is this little bitty, like maybe 2 inches by 1 inch, this little tiny greeting card that on the front has a little cartoon, like brontosaur, little dinosaur, right? And it's holding a bunch of balloons in its mouth. Like the strings for balloons. And it's just so gosh darn cute. It makes me smile every time. So it's my little sight thing. I also, once I got it out of my kit, I carried that around in my wallet for a really, really, really long time too. We'll say it is a bit soft around the edges at this point, but it's a well-loved little tiny card that I found in the UW bookstore one day when I was like 18. So I've been carrying that card around for over 20 years. I'm impressed that it's still intact at all, frankly. What did I do for a hearing? Similar challenge to you, Michelle, which is, right, I don't always necessarily have headphones with me or plugged in or anything easy, so I didn't have a portable thing, so instead I just had the intention to remember to listen to my favorite album of lullabies as my thing for hearing. Taste. I like chocolate, but I was like, oh, I'm gonna get that shit smooshed. Like, it's just gonna end up, I wanted to put, like, Reese's, right? Like, the small Reese's or something like that, because I was like, yeah, chocolate and peanut butter, let's go! But I just know myself, and I know they would have ended up pancakes of gross all over everything else if I put chocolate in there. So, instead, I went with Starburst. Because they're a nice, intense flavor. They're solid and sturdy. And so, you know, I can throw them in with everything else and not have to worry about them getting everywhere or getting ruined themselves. So I went with Starburst candies for my thing for taste. I put actually 2 things in for touch because I know that can be a big one for me. And I wanted 2 things that are a little bit different. One is just a piece of, like a small scrap of velvet, like fabric. It's probably not actually velvet, it's probably like velour or some shit, but super soft, right, fabric that I could, well, touch, obviously, since that's what we're talking about. But, you know, I like rolling it in my hands or touching my other skin with it, right, like putting it over my hands or rubbing my arms with it, things like that. And the other thing, I'm umming a lot today. My apologies, everybody. I just realized that I'm going to be in my head about it the whole time.
I said kind of a lot while I was talking.
Like, So now I'm just going to say, instead. Like, that's better. And a new makeup brush, right? So a clean one, not something that's actually ever been used for makeup. But I love the sensation of touching my skin with makeup brushes, which is hilarious because I've actually never purchased or used a makeup brush for its intended purposes. But I have totally bought them before just to be able to, like, brush over the back of my hand or fingers or rub on my cheeks or eyelids or even lips, neck or ears, right? Like, just something soft, right? And nice and gentle. So both similar ideas of something, yeah, soft and not in a creepy way, but pleasurable, right? To have the sensation of something distracting and that I could get really mindful about. Last, but so far from least, that it's actually probably most for me. I don't know why I wrote them in this order, but is smell. Oh, probably because Michelle put them in this order. That's why I wrote them in this order. Like, these are definitely not listed by use. Basically a blend of essential oils in, I think the lady that I get these from uses like an almond oil as the carrier, the medium into which she adds the essential oils. But she makes a different oil blend for each of the 8 pagan holidays through the year. Sorry, excuse me. That came out of nowhere. Okay. For each of the 8 pagan holidays through the year, she makes a different blend that is evocative of the season and the smells of the season. And the one for where we're in, well, the most recent one that we've been in, Ostara, it smells like lilacs. Mm. Oh, it makes me so happy. I love the smell of lilacs. They're coming soon here. There will be lilacs. Spring is also coming rather late this year, but I love the smell of lilacs. And it comes with a little dropper, right? So I can even, how I normally would use that is I can put a little bit on my wrists and rub it together and then just inhale off of my wrists. Everything sounds weird today to me. But get to smell it that way and then, you know, wear it. So you actually get to keep smelling it, even not just in the moment, but for a little while after using it. So that's what I put in my kit. When did I find that I used it? I would say, gosh, a few different ones. When I was around my mom, I feel strangely like saying sorry, mom, even though I know she'll never hear this, but it can be stressful, as those who have listened to me for a while know about, and I did happen to have a visit with my mom and have to see her in the hospital while we were doing this, and so definitely was using my self-soothe kit for that. If I got into any kind of conflict with my spouse, after that was a time that I found it really grounding and soothing and useful to use. Days where I was experiencing a lot of grief. I know a few of our episodes recently have talked about my grief over my friend who ghosted me. Definitely on the harder, more grieving days. And also, mooming. Jesus Christ. I don't know why this happens to me, Michelle, but sometimes I'll get so stuck on hearing myself say a thing that it's terribly difficult for me to go past it. It's like when I get in my head about saying to clients, how do I want to phrase that? A thing I probably say 17 to 25 times a day. Jeez. Anyway, that social gatherings, before social gatherings, not quite to soothe like social anxiety, though a little bit of that, but more just for like grounding purposes of sort of like centering before going into a social gathering. So, not, I guess, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that until I was just reading the notes. Most of them are relational things.
Yeah.
I used mine for relational things. Grief over lost relationship, in conflict with relationships, sadness about relationships. Mm-hmm. Of course. That's funny. I don't entirely know what that means, but it seems like it means something when I think about it. That's entertaining. That's when I used it. So what did I notice? I think I mostly used it in appropriate times. It's not a surprise, so I don't know, I guess, if this counts as something I noticed, but I definitely didn't even feel the urge to turn towards it when I was too, like, when I was really angry or if I was too anxious, right? The self-soothing kit is not my go-to, either consciously or unconsciously, when I'm, say, having a panic attack. right? It doesn't seem like what I want in the moment. Once I'm calmed down, right, it can help for more moderate anxiety, for grief, for sadness. Conflict can cause me to have, like, dissociative sort of symptoms. And so helping a lot with that grounding, right, staying present, staying in my body, and helping to recover there. But if I was fucking pissed or wildly anxious, no. Not only would it probably not have helped, but I didn't even really find myself thinking about it in those more intense moments. Perfectly in alignment with my little ADHD brain, there were definitely times that I forgot to take it with me. If I'd used it at home, then it didn't make it back into the purse, and I'd find that maybe I wanted it when I was out of the house and didn't have it. But then, often, if I put it in my purse, I would forget it was there and not necessarily use it when I was home. So that was silly. There were definitely times when I would have turned to using it if I had, if I had had it in a place I could remember. No, that was a weird sentence. If I'd had it on me and or remembered that I had it on me, I would have used it more than I did. But I'm a forgetful creature.
Yeah. Like, the first step to using a self-soothing kit is to make sure you have your self-soothing kit.
Yep. True story. Hard to use it when it simply isn't there.
Exactly.
Or is tucked away someplace your poor brain won't remember. I didn't use the same ones necessarily as Michelle, but I also found that there were some that I turned to a lot more often and some I turned to a lot less often. Definitely touch and smell are my two go-tos. Smell more than anything else. I think it helps that to enjoy the smell of something, it almost certainly is deepening and slowing down my breathing. Right, because I like to take these long inhalations of whatever it is that I'm smelling. And so I think that's part of why it sort of doubles up as paced breathing a little bit from tip almost for me if I'm using the scent portion of self-soothing with the five senses. Touch, again, I'm a very tactile human being. And the way that I use touch, and I think this could probably also go for you too, Michelle, with lotion. But it's also kind of compassionate self-touch is a part of the whole process.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, adds to part of why touch is a big one for me. Vision actually was probably next. That might be in large part just because of familiarity. Mm. I've had that little itty-bitty dinosaur for a really long time. And so he's reliably made me happy for 20 years. And so it's just kind of a go-to. Oh, maybe, yeah. Anyway, maybe you should post a picture of him, see if I can remember that. Yes. I've talked about him a few times on
the podcast. Yes, we all want to see.
He's really raggedy, but inside he says, cheer up. I wrote that in there to myself. It is actually a blank little card. But I never did sound. Mm-hmm. And I did do taste, but I think I would, if I had to do it again, I probably will just change this out, but I appreciate my intention behind the Starburst, and I think they did everything I was wanting them to do, except be soothing. They're tasty. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Starburst. There's some tasty shit, but they're more like bouncy, bouncy, bouncy flavor, not, yeah. Oh, that's nice.
That makes flavor. Sense.
But most of the things that are tiny and portable that I associate with, oh, that's nice, or go back to the problem of chocolate. So I don't know what. The
problem of chocolate? I don't know.
Yes, that it'll melt or get smooshy.
Smooshy. I was like, chocolate's never a problem, Kate. But yes, it is smooshy. It can melt.
Yep.
There are challenges.
I was like, Andy's mints, maybe? But I'm like, no, same problems as Reese's, just they're slightly more stable. Anyways, I don't know what. Cheese, but that goes bad. Mm-hmm. I think I just talked my way through it. I just ordered more off of course, you know, the evil Amazon. Yogurt-covered almonds. Ooh. I've been really enjoying those lately. They're sturdy, right? So they ain't gonna smoosh or melt. I mean, they'd be in some sort of little baggie anyway. I'm not gonna just put them in there loose because that'd be weird. But they're small, they're easy portable, they're sturdy, and they're more like, than, ooh.
There you go.
Flavor-wise. So just, that's a thing. I was like, oh, I was about to go into more sort of tips, too, because I was like, think about what you're going to put in for taste. Liking it may not be.
Yeah, that's a good thing
may to think not about. Be the only criteria.
Yeah.
Because you may not be as soothed by something that perks you up. Maybe you are. You know, your mileage may vary. And it did serve a purpose of being a bit distracting, but not necessarily soothing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I didn't find myself, part of why I didn't find myself turning towards that. Very much when actually taste is a big one for me when I'm not using a kit, right? But that often comes in the form of warm beverages.
Yeah.
Which are not so easily transportable.
You can put in, I mean, this would depend on circumstances, but if you, say, want to make sure you have, like, some tea bags on you.
Oh, that's true. Or maybe, like, something. A hot chocolate packet or something. Yeah. That could be, like, an alternative if you're at a place where you can access that when you're out and about in the world. Mm-hmm. That's true. Depends on the size. You can definitely have more than one thing for a given sense if it's something that you know you turn to a lot, right?
Yeah.
So, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that. And I guess the last thing that I noticed is that I didn't really use it for bigger picture stuff. I was thinking about it with the lovely, life nourishing, and super important for the environment rain. anyway, really dark, rainy days really get to me. And I didn't ever use it for, I don't know, atmospheric things or big overarching things. It was more acute things, right? Like something just happened. Got triggered in me for maybe the grief. And so I'm trying to take care of that, right? And not just like generally being supportive of myself during a difficult day, right? Like it was less generalized and more specific. And I actually think it would have been helpful if I had thought to use it more like for gross, dark, rainy days. Or just the days, you know, you quote unquote wake up on the wrong side of the bed or what have you. I think that there is space to use self-soothing even for less immediate or less acute kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think that's me.
Awesome. So we thought it would be important, as we've already been alluding to here and there, to give some tips or some suggestions from each of us, because if it's not already obvious, this is a learning experience and maybe went in different directions than each of us might have thought it would go originally in terms of what we were using it for and that kind of a thing. So we want to give suggestions so that if you decide to make a self-soothing kit, maybe you can avoid some of the challenges that we faced. So we're each going to give three suggestions based off of what we learned from this. So one of the things that I would suggest that I wish I had done is to create a ritual around self-soothing, no matter what is going on in your day. As you were just saying, Kate, and I felt this for me too, right? The times where I use self-soothing, I'm like, I'm going along my day. Oh, I notice something stressful. Okay, I'm going to self-soothe. Okay, now I go along my day. And maybe it would have had a different vibe or a different feel, more intention behind it. If let's say I was like, you know what? Every morning when I wake up, I'm going to start my day with this self-soothing thing. I'm going to do this, I don't know, as part of my bedtime routine, I'm going to do some self-soothing. Or the minute that I get in my car, I'm going to put on some lotion or something, right? If you just have it kind of built into your day, no matter what is going on around you, then you're going to be more likely to use it. At least I think I would have been more likely to use it if I had thought about using it more intentionally beforehand. I think that would have made a big difference in just being consistent with it rather than just, you know, here or there, whenever I think I might need it. So not that it's any in any way wrong or bad to use self-soothing like that. It's completely okay and valid. But I also think, yeah, there could be something really nice about creating ritual around self-soothing, no matter what's going on in your day, whether you're having a really, like, high emotion day where a lot's going on, or whether it's just a pretty good average day, to do self-soothing anyways, no matter what. I think something could be nice about that. So that's one thing to think about. The other thing that, again, I didn't do this because I did so much of my self-soothing while I was driving, but with that idea about making sure that you're doing whatever you're doing for self-soothing mindfully, I would really suggest closing your eyes when you do it. Really pause, take a deep breath. I think you mentioned, Kate, that for you, you try to take a deep breath and do some paced breathing as you are self-soothing. I wish I would have done those things, because then I think, it just goes back to my point that I was saying about, I really truly think I would have gotten more out of the self-soothing that I did if I had done it more mindfully. And especially because we're talking about self-soothing with the five senses, one of the things that we try to have people do in groups on self-soothing night is, with the exception of when they're using vision, of course, we encourage people to close their eyes for every single other scent. So when we're doing hearing, sense.
I was wondering if you were going to catch that, but I didn't want to interrupt you for it.
Y'all probably knew what I meant. So if we're practicing hearing, we have them close their eyes while they're listening to the sound or the song. While we're having them do taste, we have them close their eyes while they're tasting the food. It just really helps you hone in on what you're experiencing sensory-wise. And it's self-soothing with the five senses. So if you're, and again, this doesn't have to take long, but if you're able to just close your eyes, take a deep breath for 5-10 seconds, you're likely going to get more out of that experience and have it feel more soothing than if you're doing what I did a lot of the time, which is just you're doing the self-soothing thing, but again, it's in a more rushed, less mindful kind of manner. And then the final thing that I would recommend, because I noticed this for myself, replenish your kit regularly. So if you find yourself, like I did, turning to taste pretty often, make sure that you are regularly updating your kit. So this is a super basic suggestion, but I do think it's really important, because I don't want you to be caught in a situation where you want to self-soothe and then you look at your self-soothing kit and you realize you've run out of the thing you were hoping to self-soothe with. That's a bummer. Mm-hmm. So try to be on top of that. I noticed that too, actually, with my essential oils almost right away. I used the lemon one day and I was like, uh-oh, this is almost out. And I didn't think about it before I put it in there. So just try to be aware of that and make sure that you are keeping up with what you need to put into your kit so that you don't run out of anything. So those are the suggestions I was thinking of based off of what I learned through my experience of all of this.
Yeah. So a couple of these are just things I thought about, and a couple of them, at least one of them, two of them are based on my sort of own experience. The one that I just think is good practical advice for a lot of different skills, but especially for this, is to tell other people in your life, whoever your trusted others are, people that you're around enough consistently, tell them that you've built this kit. Tell them that you have it and sort of what the use cases are, right? Like, this is when I intend on using this, or this is what I want to do with this. So that they can help support you in using it consistently, right? As I know we've gone over before, we all get a little less intelligent the more upset we are, right? When you're actually in the place where you're needing the self-soothing kit, might be one of the places you're the least likely to remember to reach for it. Though, again, as Michelle had stated way earlier, don't try not to do this while you're super flooded, because that's not what self-soothing is for. But, especially when we're trying to build new habits, all the support that we can have, the better, right? People just being like, hey, it looks like you're having a really rough day. Did you want to try that self-soothing kit you were telling me about? Right? Lovely. I might not have thought about it in the moment. It was great to have somebody else remind me about it, kind of thing.
Well, so I was also just thinking of it this way, kind of metaphorically, which we've talked about it like this before in the past, when we've talked about self-soothing kits, as like a concept, but we actually haven't mentioned it today. I was just thinking of it as like sometimes we've thought about it as self-soothing kits almost being like a mental health first aid kit.
Oh, right? Sure.
Yeah. Think about what's in a first aid kit, right? There's Band-Aids. There's, you know, I know first aid kits I have like little packets of like ibuprofen or something.
Yeah. Most of them have triple antibiotic ointments. Yeah. Exactly. Alcohol wipes, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Yeah. And so if you're in an environment where everybody knows where the first aid kit is, then if you're the one who gets injured in some way, you're not the one metaphor. Who's trying to like heal your own wound. Somebody else can just be like, I know where the first aid kit is, I'll go get it for you and I can help you out. So yeah, similar sort of an idea, making sure that yeah, people are aware of this kit so they can support you when you're the one going through the stressful thing.
That makes sense. Speaking of knowing where something is.
That is a good segue. I didn't even think of that.
Thanks. My next suggestion is you might want to build more than one and stash them in places you think you'll use them regularly. Depending on what your life looks like, this might look like having them at your house, having them at your partner's house, having the one at work, having one in the car, having one at your, I don't know, parents' house, best friend's house, work. Did I already say work? Right. Just wherever you're going to spend a considerable amount of time. One in the purse that just lives in the purse. It never has to come out of the purse. It can just stay there. So you don't have to remember to put it back. And then that gives you, right, some of the people who can help you. You may or may not feel comfortable telling someone at your work about that, but you know, you could tell your partner, hey, yeah, like I like that Michelle, the first aid kit, right? Hey, this is where I keep my self-soothing kit. This mm-hmm. is when I would want to use it. Right? Yep. So people have the information to help you out, and so you don't have to, if you're like me, remember too many extra things. And building them is fun, just to say. I think. Especially, I mean, you can go kind of as, I don't know, silly is not the right word, but like, you could decorate, you could hand sew your own bag if you wanted, right? Like, this is the level of involvement that you can have in it, I think, goes
we have
all the way from Michelle's Ziploc baggies.
Yes.
And just goes up from there in complexity.
It does. Yeah. I mean, we've had people send us some pictures of
awesome
self-soothing kits, which always just makes us so happy to see when people are doing this.
Yeah, like makeup cases, right? Mm-hmm. Like the, you know, like the big hard-sided makeup cases as opposed to like little.
You put everything in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it, other than pencil cases, makeup cases were my other, like, go-to container kind of idea. But yeah, you might just want to build two or six, you know, to keep yourself as likely to have it as a resource when you need it as possible. And you ended on a super practical note, Michelle. So I will go ahead and do the same. Unless there is some small object that you really like the sound of. I'm thinking about this gal at the retreat that I was at this weekend who found a piece of vellum and found that she absolutely loved the sound of just flapping it near her ear, like the crinkly, I don't know if anybody's ever moved vellum around. It's a very particular sound. But she loved it. She just kept bringing it up to her ear and shaking it next to her ear because she loved the sound of it. If you have something like that where you just love the sound of something that's easily portable, holla fucking luya, help yourself. If, on the other hand, you're going to need to use your phone or other sound-making device to accomplish the sound that you want, it might be a really good idea to keep a pair of headphones in the kit. Go to your local drugstore, buy a pair for like $6. They're gonna be low quality little pieces of shit, but they'll work. They'll do the basic job they are meant to do, and it means you have the opportunity to listen to it without, like, I don't know, the person on the train next to you being like, I did not sign up to listen to chanting right now.
Right.
Thank you, but no thank you. So to keep yourself private and not infringe, nah, closer, whatever. Not gonna get in other people's ways or freak them out, not be offensive. It can be good to have just a little simple dinky pair of headphones that lives in each of your kits, however many you might make. unless you are one of those people that for whatever other reason has headphones on you at all times, which I doubt there's too many people, except for my nephew. I don't think he listens either, but that boy walks around with one headphone in playing music almost all the time.
Yeah, some people do. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if you're listening to me or not. With him, I'm always like, are you actually paying attention? Because my brain couldn't do that. I couldn't be listening to music in one ear and still paying attention to you. No, sorry, Bob. So, yeah. Tell people in your life so they can support you about it. Help you use it consistently. Maybe consider building more than one for places where you spend considerable amounts of time. And headphones. Mm-hmm. Good ideas. Those are my suggestions.
Cool. Awesome. So wrapping up the episode is going to look a little bit different today, I suppose, because what we've been doing for months and months and months now is doing all of our promotional stuff at the beginning of the episode. But we actually have split up self-promotion today. Kate took the main stuff at the beginning. But before we wrap up today and do closing moment, we actually want to take a couple minutes to tell you guys about something really, really cool that we have happening next week. And this is the first time we've actually talked about it on the podcast. We've been really talking about it in the Facebook group.
Behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. But Kate and I have, I guess you would call it an offering. I don't know exactly what the term is. We have a new thing we're doing.
There you go.
For all of you listening. Yeah, that just sounds more natural. So basically, for a long, long time now, Kate and I don't even know. This was pretty early on after starting the podcast. We became aware that we had listeners coming to us for different reasons, right? So we had a number of people, I would say the majority of people, who were coming to us because they were wanting to learn DBT themselves. They'd been through DBT groups and they just wanted to keep their skills fresh. And then we started to realize over time, we have a fair amount of mental health professionals who are also listening to the podcast, which at first made us feel very intimidated and overwhelmed.
Very self-conscious.
Yes, very self-conscious. Like, but we started getting emails and just feedback from people who were like, yeah, I'm listening to your podcast because I'm wanting to get more comfortable using DBT with the clients that I work with and understanding the skills better. And we were like, that's awesome. I guess that's another cool reason to listen to the podcast. So we become aware that over the years of doing this, not a small number of people listening to this are in the field. And we thought it would be cool to put together something that we could do for, and again, when I say mental health professionals, I can't think of a better term, but like anybody who, yeah, is in the mental health field in some capacity is the best way I can think to put. This includes students. So people who are brand new, just getting their feet wet in this, all the way up to, you know, social workers, mental health counselors, psychiatrists. I mean, anybody who's like been doing this for years and uses DBT with people in a professional capacity, we wanted to make something for all of them. So what we've decided to start doing is once a month, on the first Monday of every month is what it's going to be. We are going to take an hour of our time over Zoom to talk about a different DBT-related topic. And we came up with a list of, well, like 17?
Something like that,
Like, once we started talking through, well, what all could we talk about in a professional sense about DBT? There was a lot to say, and I'm sure more topics may keep coming to us. But basically, we're going to be taking a topic each month, and we're going to split that hour of our time in half. So we're going to spend the first part of that hour talking about the topic, and the second part of the hour with answering questions that people have, because Kate and I both know what it is to try to start and lead DBT groups from the ground up with very little guidance. It's not easy to do. So there's lots of different topics that we're going to be diving into, ranging from how to teach certain skills to just really like the nuts and bolts of running a group. So this time, for the first one on May 1st, we're going to be talking about marketing DBT groups. Because what good is there in having a DBT group that you're going to lead if you aren't getting many clients coming to it? And we know how hard that can be and how intimidating that can be as a therapist when you're like, I'm not a marketing professional. Like,
nobody taught me how to do this shit.
Nobody taught me how to do this shit. Exactly. So we are going to be here to teach you how to do this shit because we've learned a lot over our years of running groups. So
word.
Every month there's going to be a new topic when we meet on that first Monday of the month. And that's what the one is going to be to kick us off in May. Now, as you're listening to this, some of you might be thinking, hey, that would be really cool to come and hang out with you guys for an hour, get to meet you, hear what you have to say about that topic. I think it could be helpful. Kate, Michelle, I'm not free on Monday. too bad.
Or so I live sad. In Australia.
Right, exactly. Like, we're going to be doing it at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But we know that that is definitely not going to work for everybody. So don't worry if you can't attend live with us. Of course, we hope that a fair number of people do, because that's what's going to make it interesting and exciting to have people there with us for that hour in real time. But if you can't make it live, that's okay. Register for it anyways, and you're going to get the recording sent to you the next day. So you're still going to get to see all the information that we give out, hear the answers that we give to the questions people ask. It's going to be as if you were there, even if you can't attend live. So the other things basically to know, I mean, I'm trying to think. The other thing is that we're charging $25.
I was going to say cost is the other thing to know.
$25 to come and hang out with us for that hour. So that's the charge. And to sign up, we're going to be putting the link in the show notes for the episode. So you can just scroll down and find it on whatever platform you're listening to. So you can just click on that link and sign up if you're interested. And we've also been posting about it in the Facebook group. So if you go to the Facebook group, we've pinned it to the top of the group. Where you can go.
Because I guess people could be listening to this a long time in the future. If that's the case, the link in the description will not be accurate anymore. But assuming we're still doing these, which we have a long history of just keeping running with stuff once we've gotten the ball rolling, that would be a place you could just send us an email.
Yeah.
Right, and be like, yo, give me the link for next month.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose the other thing we could just start doing is at the when we post our monthly episode, because we post our monthly episode at the end of the month, and then this is going to be the first Monday of the month. So we can just in the monthly episodes post the link in the show notes
for the next month.
So yeah,
that
so
makes sense.
This is going to be an ongoing thing. So you're not signing up to attend every single one. You're paying $25 to attend this first month's talk. And then you get to pick and choose from there which topics we're doing that sound interesting to you and to join us for those ones. But yeah, we're going to be having a different link to sign up each time. And we're really excited to be doing this for many reasons. I mean, we want to meet the people listening to us. We want to help people who are doing the work of DBT, like to feel empowered and confident using DBT. Because I say this sometimes, like it's one thing to have an understanding of what DBT is. It's a totally different thing to talk about it in a group. Like it's a totally different thing to like teach other people what DBT is. And we just want to do everything that we can to help you feel confident in doing that if it's something that you want to start doing professionally. So we'd love to have you join us on Monday.
I'm excited about it.
Me too. Yeah, I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's not, we've been doing DBT for so long. I think it's been a while since we had an entirely new angle on it, if that makes sense.
Right. We've been doing DBT groups for a long time. We've been podcasting for a long time. So this just feels like a way to kind of blend those two where it's like, hey, we get to meet people from our podcast community who are listeners, and we get to kind of teach a little bit.
Yep. Awesome. All right.
Okay. That's all I have to say. I don't know if you have anything else to add on. I talked for a while about it.
$25 Mondays. Is there a way, Michelle, for folks who aren't attending to still get their questions answered?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I would say, yeah, you can certainly email questions to us in advance at dbtmepodcast@gmail.com, just our regular email address, and just email it and be like, hey, I signed up for, we're calling them coffee hour groups because we just want them to be like, come. Chill. Hang out. Yeah. Come hang out. Listen to us talk for a little bit. Bring coffee, tea, whatever you want to drink and be cozy with. So you can just send us an email being like, hey, I signed up for your coffee hour group, but I'm not going to be able to be there live. But can you answer this question? And we would be happy to do that.
Awesome. I think that's the only thing I can think
of. Yeah, no,
that's
such a good
point. That's the last thing.
Yes.
All right. Let's do it. All right. Go ahead and get comfortable, whatever that means or looks like for you today. Sitting, standing, laying down, walking, whatever feels good and right to your body. And if you feel safe and comfortable doing so, I invite you to go ahead and close your eyes. As per usual, I'm going to start by just noticing our breath. You don't need to breathe any more slowly or any more deeply than you do naturally. It's just about paying attention. Just about tuning in to the rhythms and the sensations of your breath and letting them welcome you into your body and into the present moment. So for today's exercise, I'm going to be walking you through visualizing building a self-soothing kit of your own. If you're listening to this and you've already built your kit, if you have access to it right now, you might take this opportunity to use it, refamiliarize yourself with it, take the chance to, use it at a time and place you might not normally, or if you don't have it handy, instead of taking what I'm saying and imagining using it to build a new kit, use it to review what's in your kit and see if it might need to be updated to better suit your current needs or likes or desires. But for everyone else, let's walk through the process. So, first and foremost, I'd love you to take a moment to visualize, what kind of container would you like to put it in? Is this something nice and easy and casual and replaceable and easy to access, like Michelle's sandwich baggie? Or all the way up through the complexity of designing and creating something of your own that is unique to you? What appeals? How big do you think you would need it or want it to be? What size fits into your life, into your car, into your purse, in your desk? Think about the places you might want to take it with you or where you might want to leave it, and consider what size or shape of container would work there for storing it. Just taking a moment and considering, what kind of container do you see yourself putting your self-soothing kit inside? Once you think you've gotten a handle on something you might like to use for putting it in, I'd love you to think about, what might you put in there to soothe your sense of sight? There's no wrong answers here. Self-soothing kits are deeply personal. They are only meant to speak to and function for you, your likes and dislikes, the things that you find soothing and accessible. So what might you be able to put in there that's small enough to fit in your container, but still brings that sense of relaxation, of soothing, being able to let go a little bit of the stress or the sadness that you might be going through and escape a little, get distracted a little by something that you're getting to look at. Just go ahead and take a moment to ponder and picture that. Once you've settled, or even temporarily come to an idea for what you'd like to include in your kit for the sense of sight, go ahead and think about how might you include the sense of hearing. Might it be like it was for Michelle and I, maybe just a little slip of paper reminding you what YouTube song, what Spotify playlist, what CD, if you're old like me, you might like to listen to? Or is there some small object that when you interact with it, it makes a sound that you find alluring? Think about what kinds of sounds leave you feeling soothed, relaxed, supported. What would you include in the kit to help you access those sounds? Next, go ahead and consider what might you put in there for taste. Is chocolate so appealing that you've designed a container in your mind that the chocolate would be safe in? No risk of melting or smooshing. Or are you thinking that I'm a silly duck and Starburst sounds like a perfectly soothing food group? Whatever it is, are you someone who perhaps only fresh foods sound appealing or soothing and you just want to commit to putting something new in each day before you leave the house? That's your self-soothing taste object for the day. Right? Maybe that even helps you make a ritual out of it, like Michelle was talking about, a ritual of putting it in and a ritual of making sure it's consumed. No right or wrong answers here. Just whatever appeals to you the most for this process. Next, considering what you might put in for the sense of touch. Some object that you find pleasant or soothing, just to touch it or to touch yourself with. This could be something it's just appealing to rub in your hands, or something if you have a large kit that maybe you'd like to put around yourself or hold or squeeze or cuddle. It could be something that's fun. Maybe a sense of fun is self-soothing for you. Maybe what goes in for touch is a toy of some sort. Just taking a moment to think about what objects you have or might like to get that would work for the sense of touch for this, for your kit. And last but not least, taking a moment to consider what you'd put in for the sense of smell. Certainly some things in the smell category can double up. You could have a scented lotion that hits touch and smell. You could put in foods that are especially aromatic and double up on those two senses. Right? But what do you like to smell? What, when you smell it, do you just want to keep inhaling so you don't have to stop smelling it? Is it something floral? Does it smell like a baked good? Is it earthy, more of a darker scent, something spicy? And what form do you think you'd like to bring it in? Is it an oil? Is it a lotion? Is it just some solid object, maybe a bar of soap that smells really nice that you could use to wash your hands with? And just imagine as you're considering all of these objects for sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell, just putting them into your kit one at a time. Noticing how it feels in your imagination to be doing this.
I will say try to pick things that you at least conceivably have access to for putting into your kit. It's lovely to dream, and we also need sometimes to be practical, at least a little bit. Once we're done here for today, I'd love for each and every one of you to consider taking this from visualization to reality and building your own self-soothing kit or six and see how you can support yourself with it. But for now, you can go ahead and let go of that visualization. Maybe take 2 or 3 slow, deep breaths to come back out of your imagination and into your body, doing any small stretches that you feel like you need, rotating shoulders or neck, wrists or ankles. And whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and open your eyes. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. To learn more about us and the DBT skills we're teaching each week, join our Facebook group. Simply log in to your Facebook profile and search for DBT and Me podcast.